Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Brothers and sisters, welcome to today's chapter of the Big Picture Show here live on Radio Islam International. I'm your host for today, Mustafa Darsot. And all I say, dear listeners, subhanallah, alhamdulillah, the Almighty has been kind to me. And as you must have heard me on air about two Saturdays ago when Brother A.B. Dawji called me, I was at Masjid Al-Aqsa. That's why I say that Allah Ta'ala has been kind to me, because I got to fulfill my dream of visiting Al-Haram Al-Sharif, Masjid Al-Aqsa at Baytul Muqaddas, and the experience was absolutely, there's words can't describe, it was awesome, it was, words can't describe how overwhelmed I was by my visit and the stuff that I learned. And today's show, I'm going to talk about that. Of course, last week Saturday I wasn't available. I wasn't back home actually. I was in Amman, and we were supposed to leave Saturday night, and guess what? We got stuck in Amman because the Jordanian airspace got shut down due to the drones that were coming from Iran. So that we were also in the middle of that and witnessed all that drama. And again, another experience as well, a lifetime experience. Though there'll be people out there who will disagree with my views on the whole matter, but that's another matter altogether. However, speaking of Aqsa, my dear listeners, my brothers and sisters out there, I have one message for you from the Palestinian people. Of course, there's been several discussions, several messages, but the one important message, please don't forget us. Please come. Please come. Please don't forget us. And that's so important, because at the end of the day, the more the people from around the world get to visit Masjid Al-Aqsa, the message is out there to those who are against the very existence of the Al-Aqsa compound, to know that, you know what, the Muslims, this is their haram, this is their third haram, and they're not going to leave it, they're not going to forget it. And that's very important, because as you know, there's been a lot of information circulating that this coming Monday, the 22nd, is going to be the what's been touted about the red heifer sacrifice. Then there's also another message going around by groups to say that people are encouraged to take goats and sheep daringly to the compound for sacrifice, and they will be rewarded as well. So you have that sort of thing, one shouldn't be surprised by such actions by the Zionists when it comes to these things, because at the end of the day, they have this fallacy of a claim that this is the lost temple. Right? That's why they refer to the Aqsa compound as the Temple Mount. And they are trying desperately through various means, and have failed so far at every point, at every attempt to prove that there was a historic temple deep in the ground under Masjid Al-Aqsa. Excavations, even causing structural problems, structural damages. Of course, there's been interventions as well by the Waqf that is there to look after the Aqsa compound. And up-to-date archaeological findings, name it, leading findings, have found no existence of any prehistoric temple on the site. But that doesn't stop the Zionists from pursuing the agenda, because at the end of the day, even if it's proven, and even if they acknowledge the fact that there's been no temple, they will still try every attempt to take over Masjid Al-Aqsa. You must remember something, that Masjid Al-Aqsa, the whole country of Palestine is, I mean, what we like to refer to as occupied Palestine, is obviously under occupation by the state of Israel. And the problem is that any landmark that is obviously not in conformity to the ardent, strong Zionist beliefs is a threat to them. Now, the most outstanding landmark in the entire occupied occupied Palestine landscape is the Aqsa compound. It is the attraction of tourists from around the world, Muslims and non-Muslims alike. When they go to the Mount of Olives and you stand there and you take that breathtaking view of the Aqsa compound, at the end of the day, it's a masjid. Now you tell me, those that who are against, who are the occupiers and who are against this, don't want that to be the attraction. They would rather make sure that there's a temple in place. Or should we say the forgotten temple. So you have that sort of thing. And no matter what, people will say that, okay, fine, and it's a misconception. I mean, I held that misconception as well, that, okay, we're going to Aqsa, well and good, we're going to Jerusalem. Of course, we'll be at Masjid al-Aqsa, but around there, it's, what is it like? What's the feeling like? What is what sort of people you encounter? And you feel that, okay, you're going to encounter Israelis and etc. And you know, you're going to be having constant run-ins with them, right? That doesn't happen. Yes, you'll have constant run-ins with those that are in security at checkpoints or at, you know, guarding the doors to the Haram gates, etc. You'll have that sort of thing. And of course, if you're unlucky and you dare happen to be on the Aqsa compound and you get that occasional raids by the settlers that happen every now and then. But that also happens whenever there's a Jewish holiday in place. It's mainly popular at the time of September to October when they have what they call Sukkot, which is over a few days. And I've spoken about Sukkot previously on air. So you'll have that sort of thing happening. And not only at that time of the year, whenever they can just be, for example, one crazy minister has to say, you know what, I think the call is there, everybody should go to the Temple Mount. And so you have those sort of raids. And they will come in their numbers, protected by Israeli security apparatus, be it the military or the police. They will come there, they will run into the masjids with their shoes on, be it Masjid al-Qibli, be it Masjid al-Sakhra, which is Dome of the Rock, etc., and cause unnecessary havoc. Alhamdulillah, I never experienced that, but I know of people that have experienced it, family and friends, and they say, and because of the confrontation, and of course, one has to confront, because at the end of the day, the people who are there, especially the local Palestinians, will object to it. So what happens is the security groups start throwing tear gas, and you have all sorts of, you have chaos erupting. So that's the other problem that you have. But nevertheless, Aqsa is a large compound of about 144,000 square meters, and it houses seven masjids. The most popular, the most iconic ones are Masjid Qibli, which was the first Qibla of Islam, which is on the, what we call the southern end of the complex. And in the middle is what we have, the iconic Dome of the Rock, Masjid al-Sakhra with the gold dome. And then you have the others in the periphery. There's another five masjids. One of them is the famous Masjid al-Buraq, which is on the right of Masjid Qibli. And there's the Marwani Masjid, etc. So you have all these masjids. And when I was there, I was fortunate to meet up with Maulana Musa Og of Durban, who's been there several times, and he took us on a guided tour of the Aqsa compound. But even there are local Palestinians. There's Sister Abi Zayad there, who is a renowned archaeologist based at Aqsa. She takes groups around. And if one has more time, then obviously you take another tour of the old city itself. The old city is absolutely remarkable. And of course, then you do your ziyarats of areas outside of that. Now, the thing is that, just to explain the dynamics of the place for those who are not familiar. Firstly, the old city is an ancient, that's why they call it the old city. It's an ancient area, neighborhood, that's around fortified walls, huge fortified walls that resembles a square, right? And these walls date back to a long time ago. And then you have major gates that enter the old city. These are huge gates, and they are always open 24/7, because those, in fact, I asked the local Palestinian that, like they close the Haram gates, if the Israelis want to be nasty, will they ever close these gates? As well, as I said, it hasn't happened so far, because firstly, those gates are so heavy. They are like those typical huge castle fortress gates. So you have the famous one known as the Damascus Gate. Then there's the other one known as the Jaffa Gate. There's a few gates there, but the most popular one is the Damascus Gate. That's when you come when you come to Aqsa, whether you come via land border through from Jordan or you come into Tel Aviv at the airport. When you eventually arrive at Jerusalem, you come into the eastern part of Jerusalem and you arrive at what is called Damascus Gate, which is an Arab quarter outside the walls of the old city. There's a famous landmark hotel there known as the Golden Walls. There's a few other hotels there as well. There's lots of eating places, and especially at night, it's a hive of activity. So you enter from Damascus Gate, and then you walk through the corridors, through the gullies, the alleys of the old city to wherever your accommodation is. If your accommodation is outside, as I said, outside the wall of the old city, then that famous Golden Wall Hotels is what's popular. But within the old city itself, there's many hotels. There's the popular Hashimi, there's a lot of guest houses, there's lodges, etc. You'll find that, and in the old city, you've got actually four quarters, of which three are what we say we would use, friendly to us. You've got the predominant one known as the Muslim quarter. You've got the Jewish quarter, but the Jewish quarter is obviously not friendly for people like us. And then you've got the Christian quarters, which is two parts. You've got your mainstream Christian quarter, and you've got what they call the Armenian quarter. The Armenian, along with the Russian church, they follow a different following. So, but nevertheless, there's no borders between these quarters. You basically walk in from one area to the other. But within the three quarters of the Muslim quarter and the Christian and Armenian quarter, majority of the businesses, shopkeepers are Muslim. And you'll see it on Eid Day. Like, we were there on Eid Day with everything closed. Between those three quarters, only two shops or three shops were open. That was it. It was like a ghost town. So you'll find accommodation within those three quarters. And as I said, there's lots of guest houses. There's the famous Hashimi Hotel in between. And there's also what they call the Armenian, the Armenian guest house. You've got the Austrian hospice. You've got the Indian hospice. The Indian hospice was apparently at the time of Salahuddin Ayyubi, whereby a group of Indians coming from India for Hajj stopped at Baitul Muqaddas and were given this area to stay in. And ever since then, it's become Waqf there. And the current family that's there, and the guy, his name is Nazir Ansari, his family has been there for about, say, the past 100 plus years or so, looking after the Indian hospice. And then if you got various other ones as well. We stayed at a place called the famous Williams. It's a small, it's become famous, although it's a year old. It's known as William Guest House. Belongs to a nice family, very hospitable. And the next question people ask, but when you're in Ramadan, will they make sari available if breakfast is if breakfast is part of your deal? Definitely yes, because at the end of the day, you must understand that they all live together. They're all there to look out for one another, and they are so good. They are so accommodating. People, whether you stay at the Armenian guest house or you stay at the Austrian hospice, wherever, if you stay in any of these Christian-owned establishments, believe me, they will go out of their way for you to make sure that your needs are attended to, especially your suhoor. So one doesn't have to worry about that. Right, as I said, there are Muslim-owned establishments as well, where you choose to book, how it meets your budget, how it meets your pocket, is entirely up to you. Right, my recommendation is stay within the walls of the old city for the simple reason to experience the atmosphere while you're there. Right. Yes, for those that want to stay outside the walls of the old city, like you get the famous Golden Walls, there's others known as New Imperial and a few others, well and good. But at the end of the day, also you must remember, your walk to the Haram gates is an even longer walk. Whereas within the old city, it depends where you are, also you can have a long walk. Like, for example, where we were staying, it was a 650-meter walk to the Haram gate. Once you enter that gate, to get you must know we're more like on the northwestern side of the Haram compound, and then you go into Masjid Qibli, which is on the south, and then you walk another like 300 meters. So if you're going for your which is good exercise, definitely, even going through those up and down inclines, right, which is excellent. So for every salah you go in, you walk in a kilometer, at least a kilometer one way, right? In some cases, if you're lucky, you can walk half a kilometer or less. Some people will stay at hostels right at the Haram gates, and I know of people, and they're very nice. When I've say very nice, they're very basic, very accommodating, nothing five star, right? So and that's the other thing, is that when we go there, we must obviously go with humility and expecting the most simple of surroundings, right? So at the end of the day, that's very important. We all know, and it's no big secret, that the South African traveler is a very fussy traveler, right? And I must say that, you know what, when you come there, if you come in there with the real intent of purposes of coming there to be at Masjid Al-Aqsa, whether it's in Ramadan or out of Ramadan, humble yourself and in tune yourself with the local environment. The feeling is absolutely, as I said, it's awesome. It's something that's indescribable. When I walked in through those gates of, through the Damascus gates as we entered the old city walls, it had been my very first time. My wife has been before, other people that we were with have been before, right? We were part of a small group, and there were others that we met up with have also been before. But the moment I walked into that Damascus gate, I straight away felt a connection with the old city. It's a feeling that you hear about it. I know friends who go every year, and they tell me about it. And you try and understand, okay, right, old city, you think of old city Istanbul, but that's not really in the walled environment. Yes, you've got the old city of Istanbul, which is around the Sultan Ahmed Hagia Sophia area, and you've got the new city, which is across the Bosphorus, where Istiklal Street and Taksim Square is, right? You have old cities in Morocco, which are, of course, one would say, a bit reminiscent or more closer in description to what the feeling you'll have when you're in the old city of Aqsa. And if one has traveled more other expanses of the Middle East, you'll come across these sort of old city environments. But when you walk into that, you feel that you're in a different place. Definitely you're in a different place, but you straight away feel this connection. And it's the atmosphere, it's, you know, you feel it when you don't want to leave the place, right? You're away from home. You thought you'd come for a quick visit, whether it's 3 days, 1 week, 10 days, 12 days, whatever it is, and you want to go a bit. But the connection you feel, the attachment you feel, that you do not want to leave the place. And you're interacting with Palestinian people all the time. Yes, you'll get the odd Jewish person who's walking through the gullies to go wherever they want to go, to the Western Wall, etc. You'll come across the Israeli security where they station themselves haphazardly along the way to the Haram gates. But at every Haram gate, you've got security there. They are standing there. They are armed. You just carry on walking. If they stop you, no need to argue, no need to confront. Right, be cooperative. They'll ask you where are you from. Tell them you're from South Africa. No need to hide. They'll ask you for your passport. They'll check your passport. And it's recommended that you do carry your passport. If you're carrying a backpack or a handbag or something with your stuff, they'll want to see what's inside. And just act normal. Don't be scared. And be cooperative. And generally, you wouldn't have a problem. Yes, what has happened is that, unfortunately, on Eid Day, amongst the few gates accessing the Haram, the one particular gate which is very popular, known as Chain Gate, for some reason after Eid Salah, and at Chain Gate, you must know there's a little police office there. So that particular day after Eid Salah, whenever South Africans wanted to access the Haram, especially for Zahar Salah, were turned away. They were having a problem. You'll get one moody character that will just feels that, you know, he owns the place, and you do as he says or you die, you know. So because they're in the position of authority, they're in the position of power, and of course they have the power because each of them are armed with an automatic machine gun, and you do not want to be in harm's way of that machine gun. So they'll say, you're from South Africa, go away. And then a few of them obviously walk around the gullies, and they'll go to another gate and they'll access the place. So that happens. Not only now, but obviously this is the experience we had on India, and I know several people said, you know, they got turned away and they eventually found their way back into the Haram through another gate. But this is not the first time it's happened. It happens all the time. There'll be Nazi guys will say, okay, you're under 50, you can't access. It happens. Even to foreigners, they don't care. To the Palestinians, generally the rule is they don't want under 50s to enter the Haram. But by the grace of Almighty Allah, and we were there on 27th night. What I noticed on 27th night is, for that particular night, they have the Palestinian security on duty as well. And of course, the security within the Haram compound itself is by the Waqf, which is run by the government of Jordan, where they have their own security. So, and they have a lot of volunteers coming. And you'll find a lot of youngsters coming in as volunteers. So on the 27th night, what we found is that you had a lot of these volunteers there on duty with the local security, with the Haram security, and they took charge. If I'm not mistaken, I don't think the Haram gates closed that night, because we left quite late that night after Tarawih, went back to the hotel, to our guest lodge, whatever, freshened up, had something to eat, relax, then went back for Qiyamul Layl, and then again in the early hours of the morning, went back to relax till Suhoor. So that was on the 27th night. Now one has to understand when it comes to Aqsa, they revere the 27th night like no other night. Yes, they are aware that the odd nights are there, but the 27th night draws people from around the Middle East region. For example, we met this lady, her sister, with her children. They come from Algeria. She's currently working in Egypt. She says she comes every year, especially for 2-3 nights, especially for 27 nights. Then from the local people, they'll come from all parts of the country of what we call within Israeli borders as Arab-Israeli citizens, and they will come and make their way to Masjid al-Aqsa. The crowd on the 27th night, by the grace of Almighty Allah, was 200,000 strong. And the Haram was packed, and there was no place to walk. Yet we told that crowd is little, because generally the crowd goes 600,000 plus. The reason why the crowd was low this year is because ever since October 7th, the Israelis have shut down the West Bank. People who are living in the West Bank cannot leave the West Bank. They cannot leave for work. 400,000 people are out of job, and they cannot come to Masjid al-Aqsa. You get the odd people who know how to climb walls and scale walls, especially that apartheid wall, and they make their way. And we bumped into one or two of them, and they said after Fajr they'll go back home. So, but the atmosphere of the 27th night was ecstatic. And then you'll find that as you go along, you'll interact with people and you realize, wait a minute, that they're from, whether it's the north close to the Lebanon border, or whether they're from Yaffa area, which is alongside Tel Aviv, or within Greater Jerusalem itself and all the other surrounding towns or villages, and they will come and they'll make it a point of coming because this is their moment. And they wish that obviously people more people from around the world are allowed to come. For example, the Malaysians and Indonesians do visit Masjid al-Aqsa in Ramadan, but this year, due to, I guess, whether you can say fake news or misinformation, they were holding back. In fact, when I messaged my Malaysian friends that I'm there at Aqsa, they were surprised. You there at Aqsa? Subhanallah, I thought the place was closed for travelers. You have that sort of problem. Then the next question people ask, but why we don't see Saudis there? Well, believe it or not, Saudis are not allowed to come to Israel or to Palestine. So therefore, they cannot visit Masjid al-Aqsa. They're not allowed. They're not allowed into the country. That is a reality. That's a fact of reality. Right, it's the Emiratis were coming ever since normalization of Trump's deal in 2020, but very few still. Even though there was normalization, very few were coming. Those that were even coming were also coming to make a statement to show off, because they feel that they are more visiting Israel than Palestine, and the Palestinians used to jeer at them, etc. So you have those sort of people. But by and large, the people who are coming there are the people from within the occupied Palestinian area of what is, as I said, within the Israeli borders as Arab-Israeli citizens and residents. However, the West Bank people were shut off. Yes, you had people from Jordan coming, and that too. Jordanian people who are, would we say, ethnically Jordanian. When I say ethnically Jordanian, means that from their forefathers, they were all from Jordan. They are allowed to come. But Jordan's population, over 50% of Jordanian population are people of Palestinian descent. Japan. So you've got a second and third generation there that's there since 1967. They are born in Jordan. They are Jordanian, but then their parents are from Palestine. And the moment, and you have to submit this information to the Israeli authorities if you want access, the moment they see you from Palestine or you've got some roots in Palestine, you are not allowed. So you find that there's a lot of Palestinians, Jordanian Palestinians in Jordan, who pine to visit Masjid al-Aqsa, to pine to visit their former homeland, are just not allowed, despite there being a relationship and diplomatic relations between the two countries. So you have that challenge as well. Then the people from the West Bank, as I said, were shut out completely. People, 400,000 people out of work since October 7th because of a blanket rule. So when you go around, like when we're driving the one day after Eid, going around, you'll find construction projects construction projects halted, be it a new railway bridge, be it a flyover over freeway, all standing still. What happened? Workers are not there to come to do the work. They cannot leave the West Bank. So currently they have that problem. So the government has tried to, Israeli government has tried to import labor. They're bringing in people from Malawi to work in the agricultural fields. They bring in people from India because Modi is trigger happy to say, listen, I'll stand by you. Don't worry, I got a lot of people in my country. I can send them to you to work. Unfortunately, it's not working out. There's a call and there's been a concerted effort by the Israeli companies that one day workers to come back to work. Whether the government listens to them or not is another story altogether. So you have those sort of challenges. Dear listeners, we're going to take a short ad break and we'll resume, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome back to the Big Picture Show here live on Radio Islam International and to our listeners on Radio Al-Ansar and on live stream. Well, dear listeners, the journey to Aqsa depends again where you're coming from. Generally, flights, if one wants to look at the flights or availability of flights currently to the area, there's very few choices available at this moment in time. For what we know, that Turkish Airlines has suspended flights to Tel Aviv, so have Egypt Air. Yes, Egypt Air as well. The only airline that flies from South Africa, or the only two routes that are available that flies from South Africa are Ethiopian Airways, which generally Ethiopian Airlines flies from Johannesburg to Addis Ababa, and you can go into Tel Aviv. Of course, they also fly to Amman. That's the route I took. Then, of course, you've got Emirates, and you can fly from South Africa to Dubai with Emirates, and then from there, we'll fly Dubai to Tel Aviv. And if you fly in Emirates, you can fly to Amman. So those are your... And, of course, if you're using Egypt there, you can fly South Africa to via Cairo to Amman. But if one is looking to fly to Tel Aviv, you've only got the choice of two airlines. It's very limited at this moment in time due to various reasons. Another thing you need to know as a traveler, that when you... if you're paying with, obviously, with your air ticket, with your credit card, you qualify for automatic travel insurance. And thereafter, there's certain categories of travel insurance. If you want more cover, etc., then you buy additional cover. However, the moment you enter the territory of the State of Israel, currently your travel cover is suspended, as well as your medical aid. Now, if you're on, whether it's Discovery or Momentum or whatever medical aid you're on, when you're traveling, your medical aid can cover you in the country you are traveling to. In Jordan, it's not a problem, but the moment you entered, again, the State of Israel territory, your cover is suspended. And these have been verified. I've made the calls. I found out for myself. These covers are suspended. So when you within that territory, bear in mind, you're on your own, if one wants to put it that way, right? Not in a nasty way, that God forbid that you get sick or you have a mishap, etc. But one has to understand that this is the challenge. But at the end of the day, help is from Allah Ta'ala. So it's in different ways that you look at it. So you have that sort of thing. Then you'll have that, if you are young, you're going to have a challenge, right? I know of youngsters that have been turned away. I know of youngsters that have got in. Even if you're in as a family, if you're in a very big family, some of you can get turned away. And again, we know of cases. You go in a small family, it's the same thing. So what we've come to realize, it all depends on your luck. Whether you land directly in Tel Aviv and you go through that border to the airport border, or you go via Amman to the land border, it all depends on your luck, who you're dealing with at that particular point in time. Now, there were a group of about 8 youngsters from South Africa a few days before I went that went through Amman, Jordan, and once they passed King Hussein Bridge, they went across to Allenby, which is on the Israeli side, and were turned away. All of them were under 30. No justification that because they were under 30, they were turned away. Unfortunately, that's the reality. You've got 8 youngsters coming in from the Israeli side. They're so paranoid, they're scared as hell, and, you know, and they brought it upon themselves, so they've created the problem. They see 8 youngsters coming. You can only imagine the silly thoughts that go through their head and say, oh, potential jihadists. And that's the reality. Deny them entry. Some of them had to sign documents, etc., to say that, you know, they've been denied entry. Those that don't sign, well, that's your luck, right? And then you go back to Amman. If you fly into Tel Aviv and you are detained at the airport, and I know of people, depends on, again, who you're dealing with, how moody that person is, you send on the next flight back home. Right? And that's it. You send on the next flight back home. You got no choice to say, listen, I mean, I might as well go to Turkey. I'd rather spend a few days. And no, no. You came in with Ethiopian Airlines. They will send you back with Ethiopian Airlines. Generally, that's the norm. If you fly Dubai, they'll send you back to Dubai. Very rarely will they allow you to reroute to another destination. So one has to understand these are those challenges that are there. But if you go in a family, generally husband and wife, or brother and sister, you know, a group of you, chances are you have less problems. Right? I'm not saying you're not going to have problems. As I said, there was one family I know of that, and it was quite a big family, that they allowed 2/3 of the family members to go through. They sent a few of them back to Dubai. Again, that's the sad reality of the situation. In my personal case, I was terrified, I must say, and I want to thank all those people out there who gave me stuff to read. Ayat from Surah Al-Yasin, there was another dua who told me to read constantly, and all those who gave us their duas and, you know, were hoping, they said that we're making dua, you go through. Alhamdulillah, by the grace of Almighty Allah, I went through, as I said, went to Amman, went through the land border without any hassles whatsoever, and no delays, no searching, no taking my cell phone, right? I was asked 4 simple questions. And the lady who attended to me there at the counter was fairly pleasant. They will treat, you'll get that, and they're supposed to do that. They're supposed to treat you with respect on arrival. Greet you nicely, ask you, talk to you politely. As I said, you get the odd person who will be rude. But that's what they're supposed to do. Even when you land in America, right, you'll find a sign there, you have the right to be greeted with respect. You have the right to be treated with respect. And even though they see you as a Muslim male with a beard, etc., they'll ask you a few questions and then they'll take you to a room for further questioning. It's not. But I'm saying that this is what it's supposed to be. So it's not that they're doing you any favor. This is what they're supposed to be. This is the way they're supposed to behave. So nevertheless, she asked me 4 simple questions. Number 1, what is the purpose of your trip? I told her, it's Ramadan, I've come to visit Masjid Al-Aqsa. Number 2, for how many days are you and when do you plan to leave? I said, I'm here for 8 nights and I plan to leave on Friday the 12th of April. Number 3, where are you staying? Have you booked accommodation? Where are you staying? I said, I booked accommodation. I'm staying at so-and-so place in the old city. It's also in, I emphasize it's in the Christian quarter, right? This is the name of the place. Do you want to see the details? Said, no need. And the 4th question, and this is a very important question. Do you plan to make contact with anybody there locally? I said, apart from meeting a few fellow South African travelers, no. Right? Those are standard questions that they ask. Of course, if they want to be more difficult, they'll ask you more questions. right? And then what happens is that, of course, if you're under 50, then what they'll do is that they'll see, again, discretionary, they feel, okay, maybe you need to be questioned further. They take your passports, put it into a plastic pouch, call for from the people from the security room and tell the waiter side here till you go through that process. In our case, we were approved immediately, given our permits to enter, which is a printed permit, which you keep with your passport and make sure you do not lose. It's a little blue piece of paper, right? Which got your photo on it, it's got your passport number, and it gives you the validity of your stay. And generally, it's like a 3-month empty visa, if one wants to put it that way. You keep it with you. Next thing you go, you collect your bags, you process it through the scanners, and then you leave the area to wait for transport, where there's a transport booth there, and you go to Masjid Al-Aqsa. So that's the process to the land border. When you land in Tel Aviv, you come out of the airport, there's transport available, whether it's taxis or some people have taken the train, which is very efficient. So you take the train and you come out right there by close to the Damascus Gate area. So those are the two forms of entry. A lot of people told me, because I'm so vociferous and I'm outspoken, that you need to learn one thing. You need to learn to keep your mouth shut. And I laugh about it, because for the first time in my life, I kept my mouth shut. You have to do that. You have no choice in the matter. Right? You get sometimes in a situation where you get livid, your blood boils when you see how the security apparatus talk to you, how they handle the Palestinians. Please, I give you one word of advice. Keep your mouth shut and do not cause a problem. Because by the very fact that you say something, that wrong person, because they're holding that machine gun in such a way with the finger close to the trigger, believe me, they are trigger happy to do what they want to do. And that's the reality. I'm not scaring you, but I'm just trying to tell you that this is the reality of what one has to face. And then you get, of course, checkpoints all over the show. Right? That's why I said it's, I'm not talking now when you're within the Haram area or the old city, when you're driving around, etc. So again, it's important that you have your passport with you. And they stop you at a checkpoint. Even if they don't greet you, even if they greet you, they say good morning or good day. Right? Do your duty. Let them feel, if it's that hadakhat person, let them feel a bit belittled that, oh, you greeting them, you know? Or let them feel irritated by that, right? And they present your passport and they'll call out your name. Call out your name, yeah, I'm here, that's it. Right, they'll ask you questions, you know, and they will ask you questions if they want to, but generally they say, okay, bye, lunch, carry on. Right? Unfortunately, people who went on ziyarah to the West Bank area, we have heard of cases whereby people bought some merchandise or, you know, or mementos of Palestine, whether it's wristbands, whether it's rings, chains, etc., you know, shawls, that said that. Unfortunately, again, they got stopped at the wrong checkpoint, and being stopped at the wrong checkpoint, you got again the wrong person there. When you get the wrong person there, went through the shopping parcels, which they normally shouldn't do as a tourist there, but went through the shopping bags and confiscated stuff that they found or was deemed offensive to them. You have that reality. On the other hand, you have others who have bought stuff and they have had no problem. So again, you counter these sort of things. So this is what the experience of the trip to Aqsa is all about. However, despite all the negativities, one has to look at what the positive is there to gain from this trip. Number one, being there with the local people is the best feeling, as I said. Moving around the old city, roaming through the streets and gullies of the old city, because you have to go through those gullies to get to the Aqsa compound, it's a wonderful feeling, a feeling that will be in your memory for the rest of your life. And when you enter the Haram gates and you're there on Aqsa compound, whether you're sitting on the outside or in one of the 7 masjids, generally, we all go to either it's in Ramadan, they restrict the Dome of the Rock access for ladies, which is understandable, and the men go to Masjid Qibli. Right? But generally, when it's out of Ramadan, men and ladies can access both. Right? Just to be there, whether it's, as I said, you're sitting in the courtyards of the Haram compound, or you're sitting within the masjid, or you're just sitting there doing nothing, under a tree, relaxing against a tree trunk, you put your musnad out there just to absorb the fresh air, to you know, just to absorb the tranquility. That feeling is overwhelming, and of course the food. Right, food is not cheap, right? And if you go in there, I recommend that you don't convert, because if you convert, it's currently 5 rand to 5 rand 50 to one Israeli shekel, right? Much as because their currency is at about 3.72 to the US dollar, like the Saudi riyal is about 3.75 to the US dollar, so it's about more or less the same. So if you're going to convert, then you're not going to eat, right? So take advantage of the local cuisine. You get, whether it's the shawarmas, whether it's the baklavas, the kunafa, all the other sweet stuff, the chai, the mint tea, the Arabian coffee. You also get Turkish salad there. You get the fresh juices. Oh yes, the fresh juices are too good. Whether it's orange juice, carrot juice, pomegranate juice, the fresh juices, pineapple juice, they're just too lovely. And that's what you engage in. And of course, support the local business people while you are there. Right? I'm not saying go on a shopping spree, right? You're not going there for the purpose of shopping. But you'll find that as you walk in along, whether it's clothing items, whether it's items or gifts, whether it's just anything in general, whether it's kafirs, whether it's printed T-shirts, support the local people. At the end of the day, they need our support. And it was said that since October 7th, it's been absolutely quiet. In fact, I know of a cousin who arrived at Aqsa just at the start of Ramadan and went outside Damascus Gate, especially at night. When you come outside Damascus Gate and you go into the restaurants outside across the road in the vicinity of the Golden Walls, and in between, there's a street nearby called Salahuddin Street, with a hive of activity. It was absolutely dead. Even on the steps coming down to Damascus Gate from the main road, people sit there at night. The atmosphere is beautiful. It was quiet. But then, of course, because it was the last 10 days, then there was more movement of people, then it was fine. But dear listeners, unfortunately, time has run out, and that's all I've been able to speak about. And inshallah, next week, we'll catch up and talk about more. But this was an overview of my visit. Still not talking about the politics, etc. We'll discuss that on the next show. But any questions asked, please, those of you who know me can get hold of me if you want to. A friend, get my number, not a problem. You can phone the studio too and get my number, that's not a problem as well, and we can discuss. And of course, take information from those who have been, and take advice. And again, remember what the Palestinian people said: please don't forget us, please come and visit us. Oh, and I forgot something very important to mention. With all the poverty and challenges that you have, the Palestinian people do not reach out with their hands asking for money. Right, you won't find beggars. Yes, you find the odd beggar here and there, you know, roaming around the haram asking for money. You won't find beggars, and you won't find pickpockets and criminal elements. That's how much sabr Allah Ta'ala has given them. And we make dua for them for their freedom, inshallah, one day. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.